Hello, I'm Paul Scott, and today I'm talking to Host More, ticker M-O-R-E. I've got Robert Cook, the Chief Executive, and Alan Clark, the Chief Financial Officer, on the line. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, quick disclaimers. I'm not charging a fee for doing this. I am a personal shareholder in Host More, and we're not giving share recommendations or any financial advice. Okay, let's start then. If I can just ask you to give us an overview of Host More.
Certainly. Thanks, Paul. So Host More, we listed on the 2nd of November last year, coming up towards the end of the year. And really what Host More is the fundamentally the home of Fridays, formerly known as TGI Fridays in the UK. That is the main brand. We have 87 stores up and down the UK from as far north as Aberdeen right down to the south coast. And our second brand, 63rd and First, which is our new brand, our upmarket cocktail bar with sharing plate concept. And we have opened three of those, one in Glasgow, one in Harrogate, one in Cobham, and secured two new sites in Edinburgh and Cambridge. So that really what constitutes presents Host More.
Okay, great. So now Fridays is a franchise business, isn't it? So what fees are you paying to the franchisor, and who is the franchisor?
Well, it is a franchise business, you're absolutely right. We pay 4% fees of our revenue to TGI Fridays US, who are the franchisee. And we've held that franchise in the UK for 35 years now. It was our 35th anniversary last year, and we've got that extended agreement right through to 2033.
Great. And your new brand then, 63rd and First, that's obviously a street reference in New York, I would imagine. Could you tell us a bit more about that format? And is that also a franchise business?
It is a franchise business from the same franchisee. It was the address or the street, two streets where they converged in 63rd and First. It was the first Friday store in the US in 1965. So we wanted to adopt that name. As when it did open back then, it was a cocktail bar. It was quite the rage at the time, and hence it was the birth of the brand as we know it now in across the world. And 63rd and First, we spoke to our consumer, and they said, "Look, we would love you to get into cocktails for those who remember Fridays way back. I've gotten a bit older now, so it's really targeted an older demographic, and is going to university towns and targeting." I know the demographic, but also the professional demographic. And as I say, it's serving high-end cocktails in an interesting, eclectic way with a nice complement of sharing food in a grazing sort of format, all based on American street food.
Okay. And then you seem to have a third format developing under the Fridays name, which you mentioned in the most recent announcement in Dundee, this quick service restaurant. Could you tell us a bit more about that? Because I can't really sort of visualise that.
Yeah, I mean, look, we see one thing we've learned is in our 2 years with the business and certainly during lockdown is that this brand has got high presence in the UK and is well loved in the UK. And we are rather underpenetrated. There's only 87 stores up and down the country. So our view was to let's see how we can get into a space where we can develop a brand within the Fridays stable at pace and. Quick service restaurants, QSRs, or fast casual is certainly the rage at the moment with Leon expanding very rapidly and also the sort of heritage brands of KFC and McDonald's and now Five Guys. We are going to take Fridays into that market. So it's a grab and go. It's authentically Fridays. You'll know you're in a Fridays when you're in it. The red and white stripe is prevalent. The memorabilia, the American memorabilia on the walls, the music, the fun and flair of Fridays is still there and the food. Is absolutely from our menu in Fridays, but it's served in a to-go fashion. So it's great packaging, iconic red and white stripe packaging, and we see this as our way of getting the business out there in a far bigger volume and go alongside the core brand development that I'll go on and talk about a little bit later. But I think the important thing is that this is a trial, but we see it going into many of the areas we're not in, but also we see it coming into in London in a meaningful way, but we also see it coming into the ever-changing forecourt, the petrol forecourt market, the motorway service station market that's changing with the invent of EV, and dwell time in these destinations is going to be longer, and we think our Friday's product could potentially work there. But first and foremost, the trials in Dundee.
Interesting. And I suppose with the motorway service station, with the advent of electric cars, people are going to be hanging around longer potentially while they charge the vehicles, I suppose, as well.
That's right. I mean, it's a 45-minute fill for charging an EV vehicle, so the dwell time is there, and we can certainly serve you well within that time. This is as if you've been into any other quick service restaurant. That's the speed of turnover that we intend to do. And as well as that, Paul, we'll have there'll be delivery hubs, and there'll be dark kitchens as well. So our delivery and Just Eat drivers will be welcome to pick up their food from there that's been ordered locally. So it's got two strings to its bow, really.
Yeah, I mean, just follow-on question on that. I mean, it sounds like your addressable market is much, much bigger than the sort of original standard type chain.
Yeah, we think so. We think so. Yeah. It gives us more bread.
Interesting. Okay, moving on then to current trading. You've just put out a trading update. Now, you said that December trading was better than expectations, really good, but then it said revenue was 8.3% lower than in December 2019. So I didn't quite understand that. Could you clarify?
Paul, yes. What happened there was that, if you recall, at the beginning of December, that's when the Omicron variant reared its head in the first instance. So when we looked at the trading expectations for the month in the early part of December, it was very unclear as to what was going to happen. We knew that the Scottish and Welsh regional governments were talking about placing restrictions in place, but the English government was very uncertain as to what it was going to do. So our expectation, certainly at the beginning of December, was one that it could be a very difficult month, particularly if there was going to be a restriction put in place. Additionally, at that time, government wasn't very clear as to what sort of financial support would be made available to us as well. So we're very pleased to look back upon time now and say that in the absence of the restrictions being brought in, we traded much better than what had been expected.
Okay, thanks for that. And then also just many hospitality and retail companies publish like-for-like revenue performance stats because, you know, stripping out new store closures and new store openings. But you didn't do that in yours. You just gave total revenue. So is there much difference between total revenue and like-for-like revenue?
It's not so marked. I think what we were very keen to put across to the reader was the fact that our performance overall was very strong. And I think, I guess, the sense of being the revenue is certainly an indication of performance, but what is most important in the eyes of the investor is ultimately the profit that is generated therefrom. So I think, yes, our like-for-likes have continued to be positive against FY19, but I think the really standout statistic for us was our performance in terms of margin, how that had improved over FY19.
Okay, and of course there is a tailwind from the VAT reduction at the moment, isn't there? Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. When does that expire? I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's on the 31st of March, where it will revert back from 12.5% to 20%.
Okay, thanks. So are you going to need to put through price rises then to offset the loss of that benefit?
There is the possibility of doing so. It's not at the forefront of our thinking at this moment in time, because what we're focusing on most is to make sure that the value proposition to our guests meets their expectations. I think certainly in terms of feedback that we're receiving, there is very much an opportunity for us to put pricing up, and we will certainly not leave anything on the table. But what we'd like to do is do it in a manner whereby the customer feels that they are still getting the value for money. And what's most important to us is making sure that that customer feels the value is such that they'll want to come back to us on multiple occasions. So we'll do it in a way which is complementary to the customer expectation.
Yeah, okay. I've mystery shopped the Bournemouth branch quite a few times since I became a shareholder. And I've got to say, I think the prices generally are kind of at the top end of what I think is reasonable personally. But anyway, that's just some personal feedback. Now, let's look next to inflation. Obviously, everybody's talking about increased costs, and I think the minimum wage is going up by about 6.5% in April. So how do you handle, you're obviously not immune to cost inflation, so how are you planning on handling this?
There are a couple of areas in terms of the cost base that we've looked at, and I think in terms of the commodity prices, we've been in a fortunate position whereby we've largely contracted our supply and our pricing through the midpoint of this current financial year, so that puts us in a fairly solid position. In terms of the payroll, you're absolutely right on the national minimum wage, but how we've tried to counter that is becoming much more efficient. So we've introduced new workforce management processes, which allows for much more dynamic control over the forecasting and the actual staffing on a day-to-day basis. And we've also brought in efficiency metrics so that we can go store by store and truly maximize the utilization of the staffing. And then finally, the most significant thing, which is very much at the forefront of everybody's minds, is utilities. And we did in an earlier announcement put out that we had been in the fortunate position to hedge our pricing on the go forward, whereby our gas, for example, is hedged 100% using FY19 volumes as a guide up until the end of December 23. And similarly, our electric is hedged 100% up until the end of March, and then it drops down to 50% until the end of this year, and then 25% thereafter.
Oh, brilliant. That's really good news. Yeah, okay. So next, going back to expansion of site numbers. So you're rolling out two brands now, plus the quick service restaurants as well. So how many new sites do you see yourself looking for, and what sort of deals are around, and how much profit are these stores expected to contribute?
Okay, let me take the first part of that, Paul. So you've got the two brands, you quite rightly said. Fridays, we've got an obligation through a development agreement with a franchisor from the US to open nine new stores by the end of 24. We've opened, obviously, only Lincoln to date. So we've 8 stores to open. This year, we will see a new store opening in Chelmsford and Barnsley, which we've announced both. We're very close to finalising our deal in Durham. And we're very close to finishing off a deal in Ashford in Kent. And as well as that, obviously, we've got the new store in Dundee. In terms of 63rd and 1st, we've got the 3 sites open currently. We've secured Edinburgh. We took the old Café Rouge site there, and we've secured Cambridge, where we took the old Strada site there. And they'll both be May openings this year. We are continuing our hunt for 63rd and 1st stores. We've got one other live at the moment, but our aspiration is to get, by the end of this year, to have 10 either open or acquired by the end of the year. The deals around are very tenant-friendly. We're not paying, for example, on distressed assets that we're taking on. We're not paying premiums. We're on 70% rents of previous rent profile, and we're getting pretty impressive rent frees. But on Fridays, and in particular new stores I refer to, there are capital contributions coming in from landlords of significance, which is a moment in time, and we're enjoying that moment in time, and we've secured a nice pipeline with that. And really, our time is now. We're gonna hold, wait for a quarter, and let's see what else comes available in the market once the rent moratorium is lifted, business rates come back into play, VAT goes back to 20%, and national minimum wage kicks in. We see that as difficult headwinds, sure, but with the strength of our balance sheet and cash at hand, we believe that that's a great opportunity for us to jump on single asset opportunities or potentially portfolio opportunities. Alan, yes. You might want to just say about profit on new sites.
Yes. So, Paul, the approach that we're taking is slightly different between the two brands. The TGIF brand is obviously more well known across the country. So we're working on a payback period of between 2 to 3 years on a TGIF brand, and the 63rd and 1st we're working on about 3 to 4 years, and with an expectation that that will start to improve as it becomes more well known across the wider geographic. I think the other contributing factor, which is very important, is the 63rd and 1st, because we are being able to pick up stores which are from distressed competitors, generally the investment cost is much lower. So I'm hopeful that that return will improve as time goes forward.
Interesting. And, I mean, over the years that I've been following retail and hospitality, the thing that really pulls down companies in recessions is the lease liabilities, isn't it? They're locked into these rents that then are uneconomic. I mean, are you structuring your deals with break clauses or turnover rents or anything like that that can enable you to dodge the bullets on that front?
I think it's on a site-by-site case. Certainly what we have taken into account is we've started to introduce clauses whereby if there is a material deterioration in revenues, that we can get some benefit therefrom. So, by example, a pandemic clause is not unusual now for us to be seeking. In terms of break clauses, in the first instance, generally you can get a break clause, but quite often it comes at a price in terms of the rent that you might pay attached to it. So what we try and do is we look at it in the rounds in terms of not only the lease liabilities that may be come into being on entering into the lease, but it's also sort of the investment costs. So we try and look at sort of the whole investment and see how that balances out. Certain things may be less palatable than others, but the whole investment has to work for us before we proceed. So we're not averse from walking away from a deal if we don't think it's not going to work for us.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, as you mentioned before, you probably have a deluge of opportunities from April onwards when all these support measures end, I guess.
Yeah, we do. And I think also, Paul, we've really tidied up the estate during the pandemic, had a great relationship and a good strategy with our landlords in a very sort of sharing the pain way, and cleaned up the estate. And we've been able to take some elongations of leases, which has given us some rent-free within that. We have done one or two that have been turnover, based on turnover. So there's a bit of a melange. But to Alan's point, you know, we look at it holistically. And if the deal is not right, we walk away. And the days of us investing £1.5 to £2 million of our own money into a restaurant have gone. You know, there are deals to be done at the moment and gives you a healthy pipeline in order to do so.
Yeah, and I think I picked up on something you said on your webinar that you did a little while ago last year, where you said that because of the way you treated the landlords in the pandemic by negotiating and continuing to pay rent, that they're favouring you as a new tenant on other sites. Did I remember correctly on that?
No, that's correct, and that, you know, that's where you know, with the strength of our covenant and the fact that we've dealt with rent pretty well in the pandemic, they've been bringing sites to us, as I've described, you know, with seeing us as an anchor tenant with capital contribution and good rent free.
Yeah, great. Okay, let's move on then to customers. So you mentioned in the RNS that customer satisfaction scores are improving. Now, I did some Googling on this and found that the TripAdvisor ratings for a lot of your sites only seem to be a middling, sort of 3 to 3.5. And I know there are issues with TripAdvisor. You know, sometimes it can attract malicious people who just want to leave bad reviews for the sake of it and so on. But you are well below some of your competitors. I saw Nando's, Ask Italian and Pizza Express, for example, which are all next adjacent to your Bournemouth store, and they've got higher scores of 4. So do you accept that standards need to improve, and what are you doing on that front?
Well, I think we've, since we've been here, standards have improved. And if you think, if you look at our overall, we have a mechanism called Feedback, which is an aggregator of TripAdvisor, Trustpilot, social media, Google, and our own QR guest questionnaire that we send out to everybody when they dine with us. And actually, TripAdvisor index is very low in terms of volume of response for us. So overall, since we launched the new menu proposition and drinks range in September, we have seen our overall score, so that's our MPS, our guest score, through all the different aggregated mediums of guest response, we've seen our scores of 4.2, which is a green score for us, of a total of 5. A minimum of 4.2 gets you into the green. We've seen that consistently now for the last 8 to 9 weeks. So we think we are definitely on the march in terms of our standards. And look, I've been operator all my life. What needs to be done is it just needs constant focus and constant attention. And we have highlights and lowlights every week that we discuss across the piece, and we address where we've been poor of a week, and we commend where we've done well in a week. And we as I say, the overall green score in the feedback mechanism is averaging higher than it's been. If I take the May to September number and the September to now number, it is far much improved. So we think we're on the right trajectory.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. And I mean, I did notice as well, coming back to your point about the number of reviews, I did notice on TripAdvisor that considering it's a big site and you must serve hundreds of people every day in the Bournemouth store, there were a relatively small number of reviews over a three-month period. So it's, you know, well under 1% of the people you've served leave a review, don't they, on TripAdvisor?
Yes.
So,
and also, I should say as well, Paul, we've invested in a new outbound and inbound call centre for guest satisfaction and just general bookings. And if we have any negative feedback through our own score mechanism, which is our predominant one through our QR code that we give you at the bill stage, you know, we're onto that. I mean, our strike rate, that is in 48 hours now that we have returned a reply to you and have recovered you if you were underwhelmed or thank you for if you commended. So we've got that mechanism going on in the back, which was a necessary evil in that. And I think it's just all part of our digital strategy and our whole customer experience that we're trying to improve.
Yeah, okay. And just, again, so I don't know how relevant this is, but just some personal mystery shopping feedback. I found the staff in your Bournemouth store absolutely great, really well trained and very pleasant. But there's usually something that goes wrong with every meal when I go there. For example, the Diet Coke is always flat and I always have to send it back. And that's been for several weeks now. And, you know, and she said in the end, I can give you it from a bottle. But I'm thinking, what if, say, 10% of customers all have Diet Coke? They're all going to have a horrible flat drink. You know, things like that don't seem to get rectified.
Yeah, well, I'm firstly apologise for that. And let me get on to that, why there was obviously a problem with the system. I'm glad you did try and recover it by offering you a bottle, but that's not the point. You know, as I said in the customer satisfaction scores, they are on the improvement. But you know, we are as an industry, you know, we've a lot of moving parts, and sometimes things go wrong. But how you recover that? So be rest assured, when this phone call goes down, I'll be on to my procurement and the local store to find out what's happened with the Diet Coke fizziness. So yeah.
Great. And I mean, yesterday I had to send my steak back because it wasn't cooked right, and she just said, "No, we're not going to just cook the steak a bit more. We'll give you the whole meal again fresh," you know. So it was well handled by the staff. But anyway,
that's good recovery. That's how you should do it.
Yeah. No, they are definitely well trained. There's a lot of evidence of that, I think. So turning to more important matters, the shareholder base. Now, obviously, you weren't responsible for the demerger, which I think was botched really by Numis because they didn't match up buyers and sellers. So, I mean, is this why do you think that your Hostmore shares are currently only rated on about 5x EV EBITDA, much, much lower than competitors? Has the demerger resulted in a sort of imbalanced shareholder register, maybe with some forced sellers in there?
Paul, if I can address that one. My sense is that there are a couple of factors which have had some bearing on where we've ended up. And my view is that it's probably something that in the short to medium term will recover itself. I think the Hostmore, in terms of the name, was not familiar necessarily with many people. So there's been a bit of an education that we've been doing, explaining to parties just what Hostmore is and what the purpose of Hostmore is. I think the second thing is, as we start to deliver good quality trading results on sort of a regular basis, which is our ambition and purpose, obviously, I think that will then automatically result in both people becoming more interested in us and people also then starting to rate the share much more highly. I think the underlying profitability of the share is there. In our last trading statement, we indicated that we've had a good result for the FY21 period. So I think there's a little bit more education that needs to be done to make sure that, you know, investors see us. There are no forced sellers. We have a shareholder base which is very stable. Amongst the top 15, I'm very pleased to say that we have the support of the wider shareholder base. So a lot of what's happening at this moment in time, I'm hoping it's limited to people who might not be that familiar with the opportunity, And whilst it's disappointing to see them leave us, I'm equally pleased to see that for every seller there is a buyer, so somebody is seeing value.
Yeah, and I think it's good that you're doing presentations to private investors as well, because obviously it's the private investors who create the liquidity and set the share price, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's all part of the education, really, Paul. And we've got to get our story out there, and we think it's a great story to tell. And I think, you know, we're very positive about the year ahead. We've had a good output in 21. We've got a great pipeline, and you've identified something that's really, really important in our industry. And we've got some great staff who are well trained and are wanting to please. So I think that plus a good with the good operation that we have, the exciting pipeline with the two brands. You know, this is a compelling proposition to current and future investors.
Yeah, great stuff. Oh, it sounds like you've. I was going to ask you if you wanted to sort of wrap up with a summary, but you've more or less done that. Anything else you wanted to cover, gents, before we finish?
No, I think I'm good anyway. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed that, and hope to do it again sometime. And good luck for 2022.
Okay, Paul. Thanks for your support.
Thanks a lot.
Keep well.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.